felt numb, as if I'd been shot up with Novocaine. The oddest thing. This lawyer will get in touch with her relatives and...
I also talked to Nate Rutherford. Known him?
Donkey's years, I'm sure. You've been busy, Deputy Pelley.
I get around,
he said, and not without satisfaction.
He's been Mrs. Bell's lawyer for...
He seemed to consider donkey's years and decided it should be put to bed.
For decades. He pretty much took over her affairs after Mrs. Bell's husband and boys died. She was what they call prostrate with grief. And you know what? He says she doesn't have any relatives.
Everybody has relatives. Donna, my late wife, claimed that her family went back to Mary Stuart, also known as Mary Queen of Scots.
I did go to school once upon a time, Mr. Trenton, back when all the phones had dials and cars came without seatbelts. I asked Nate how much the lady's estate might total up to, and he declined to say. But considering the property, Bay to Gulf, very fine, I'd guess quite a tasty chunk of change.
I got up, rinsed my coffee cup, and filled it with water, giving myself time to think. Also listening for the stroller, but that was quiet. I came back to the table and sat down.
Are you seriously suggesting that I somehow coerce the lady into writing a jackleg will? And then,
what, killed her? The eyes boring into mine.
I think you just suggested that, Mr. Trenton. But since you have, did you?
Good Christ, no. I talked to her twice. I indulged her little fantasy. Then I found her dead, of a heart attack most likely. She told me she had arrhythmia.
No, I don't really believe that, which is why I'm not here asking you to make an official statement. But you see the position it puts me, the department, in, don't you? Lady makes out what they call a holograph will just before she dies, gets it witnessed up, and the man, the stranger, who finds her body also turns out to be the beneficiary.
She must have been crazy about more than just her kids, I muttered, and found myself thinking about that song Officer Zane had mentioned, Delta Dawn.
Maybe see, maybe no. In any case, the autopsy's probably going on as we speak. That'll tell us something. And you'll have to testify at the inquest, of course. That will be official.
My heart sank. When?
Maybe not for a couple of weeks. It'll be by one of those computer video links. FaceTime, Zoom, I don't know. I can barely use this fancy phone.
I didn't believe that for a minute.
In any case, it'd be good if you stuck around, Vic.
Now my first name felt like a trap.
In fact, I have to insist. The way things are, with the COVID running wild, it would probably be safest for you to stay right here, buttoned up and masked in town, don't you think?
It might have been when I began to realize what Alida Bell had done, although it wouldn't coalesce until that evening. Or maybe it hadn't been her. I thought of Donna on that last night, how she'd looked past me, her dying eyes growing bright one last time. "Oh, my God," she'd said, "you're all grown up." Children couldn't plot and plan. Adults, on the other hand...
Vic? Hmm?
The smile lines at the corners of his eyes crinkled.
Kind of thought I'd lost you for a minute.
No, I'm here. Just processing.
Yeah, it's a lot to process, isn't it? For me, too. Like one of those mystery novels. I think you better stick to your original plan. Stay until September. Take your walks in the morning or in the cool of the evening. Have a swim in the pool. We need to figure this out if we can.
I'll think about it. The smile lines disappeared.
Think hard. And while you're thinking, stay in county.
He rose and hitched at the belt of his shorts.
And now I think I've taken up enough of your time.
I'll see you out.
No need. I can find my way.
I'll see you out, I repeated. And he raised his hands as if to say, have it your way. We went down the stairs to the garage. He paused partway and asked, with just the right combination of curiosity and sympathy,
how did your wife die, Vic?
It was a normal enough question, No reason to believe he wanted to find out if there had been anything suspicious about it, but I had an idea that was in his mind. And not just in the back of it, either. "Cancer," I said. He went the rest of the way down the stairs.
"Very sorry for your loss."
"Thank you."
"Will you be taking the stroller back to the Bell House? You could put it in the back of your truck."
I wanted to be rid of it.
"Well, yes," he allowed. "I could, but what would be the point? It might just come back again, if this prankster is determined to have his little joke at your expense. We send a cruiser up Rattlesnake Road once or twice a night, but that still leaves a lot of dead time. And there's some officers down with COVID. It might be just as easy to leave it here."
He doesn't think there's any prankster, I thought. He thinks it was me, both times. He doesn't know why, but that's what he believes.
"What about fingerprints?"
He scratched the back of his seamed and deeply tanned neck.
"Yeah, could do. I've got a fingerprint kit in my truck, but that would mean taking transfers of any prints I made, and I might mess it up. Hands aren't as steady as they used to be."
I hadn't noticed that and didn't now.
He brightened.
"You know what? I can at least dust those chrome bars and take some pictures with my phone if I find anything. No point trying the hand grips. They're rubber, and those little arms beside the seats are fabric. But those metal push bars are, yeah, ideal for prints. Did Zane or Canavan touch it?"
"I'm not sure, but I think just me. And Allie Bell, of course."
He nodded. At this point, we were still at the foot of the stairs. We hadn't gone out into the garage yet.
"So I could find two sets of prints, yours and Mrs. Bell's. Although unlikely, most people would just use the rubber hand grips."
I think I reached down and tilted the stroller up to get it over the door jamb and into her garage. If I did, I could have wrapped my hands on those rods just below the grips. He might not find fingerprints, but there would be palm prints.
He nodded, and we went into Greg's garage. He headed outside to get his fingerprint kit, but I took his elbow to stop him.
"Look," I said, and pointed at the stroller.
"What about it?"
"It's been moved. When I brought it in from the courtyard, I put it next to the driver's side of my car. Now it's on the passenger side."
So I had heard the squeaking.
"Can't remember for sure."
His frown, the vertical line between his brows so deep I couldn't see the bottom, told me he did remember, but didn't want to believe it.
"Come on, Andy." I used his given name deliberately, an old ad conference trick I employed when arguments got heated. I wanted us to be in this together, if possible.
"You've been a police officer long enough for observation to be a habit. That stroller was in the shade. Now it's on the other side of my car and in the sun."
He thought about it and shook his head.
"Couldn't say for sure."
I wanted to make him admit it. Wanted to tell him I'd heard that squeaky wheel when the pram had been moved, even if he hadn't. Wanted to shake the arm I was holding. Instead, I let it go. It was hard, but I did it, because I didn't want him to think I was crazy. And if he thought I was the one moving the stroller at night between the Bell House and Greg's, he was already halfway to drawing that conclusion. And there was Allie Bell's weird holograph will for him to think about, too. Did he really believe Allie and I were bare acquaintances who'd only met twice? Would I have believed it? I had an idea the questions were just beginning for me.
"I'll get my little kit," Pelly said, "although I'm not hopeful."
He drove off in his pickup 10 or 15 minutes later after reminding me again not to leave the county, saying it would be a real bad idea. He told me that he or one of the full-time county detectives would be in touch after the autopsy. That was a long day. I tried to nap and couldn't. On several occasions, I thought I heard the squeaky wheel and went down to the garage. The stroller hadn't moved. I wasn't surprised. I had heard it when Pelly was sitting at my kitchen table. That was real. Later on, it was something else. Imagination, you would say. But it wasn't. Not exactly. I thought it was a form of teasing. You can believe that or not, but I felt sure about it. No, I knew. Once when I heard that squeaking, not real, but real in my head, and I went down to the garage, I thought I saw the shadows of snakes on the wall. I closed my eyes tight, then opened them. The shadows were gone. They hadn't been there, but they had been. Now there was only the stroller, sitting in the sunlight on the cement garage floor and casting its sane shadow. Around noon, as I was eating a chicken salad sandwich, I thought of oiling that squeaky wheel after all. There was 3-in-1 on the work table in the second garage bay, and decided against it. I didn't like the idea of touching the stroller, but I could have. I wasn't hysterical or phobic about it. Only I remembered the old Aesop's fable about the mice that belled the cat. Why did they do that? Because they wanted to be able to hear it coming. I felt the same about the stroller, especially after Pelly dusted the chrome rods and found nothing, not even the random smudges and bits of dust he would have expected.
I think it's been wiped by your prankster,
looking right at me when he said it. That evening I walked the length of Rattlesnake Key to the swing bridge. A long walk for an old man, but I had a lot to think about. I started by asking myself again if I was crazy. The answer was an emphatic no. The snakes in the tub and the waving hand could have been a stress-induced hallucination. I didn't believe it, but granted the possibility. The stroller in the bathroom, on the other hand, had been there. I'd only seen its shadow, but the sound of the squeaky wheel had been unmistakable. And when it was in the garage, it had moved. I'd heard it. I didn't think Pelly had, but he knew it was in a different place, although he didn't want to admit it to me, or probably to himself. The swing bridge was a 24/7 deal. That night it was being manned by Jim Morrison. Not of the Doors, he always liked to say. A guy who was probably older than either Pelly or me. We talked for a while when I got there. The weather, the upcoming election, how COVID had emptied the baseball stadiums except for cardboard cutouts of make-believe people. Then I asked him about Mrs. Bell. You found her, right? Jim said. We were outside his little booth, where he had a television, a beat-up easy chair, and a toilet cubicle. He was wearing his yellow high-visibility vest and his red cap with Rattlesnake Key on the visor. A toothpick jutted from one corner of his seamed mouth. Yes. Poor lady. Poor old soul. She never got over losing those boys of hers. Pushed that stroller everywhere. Which was a perfect lead-in for what I really wanted to ask. Do you think she really believed the boys were in it? He scratched his stubbly chin as he thought it over. Can't say for sure, but I think she did. At least some of the time. Maybe even most of the time. I think she made herself believe it. Which is a dangerous thing, in my opinion. Why do you say that? Better to accept the dead. Wear the scar and move on. I waited for him to say more, but he didn't. Were you in on the big snake hunt after they died? Andy Pelly told me about it. Oh, yeah, I was there. To this day, I can smell those rattlers as they burned. And you know what? Sometimes I think I see them, especially around this time of day. He leaned over the rail and spit his toothpick into the Gulf of Mexico. Dusk, you know. Real things seem thinner then, at least to me. My wife used to say I should have been a poet with ideas like that. After the stars come out, I'm okay. I'll see plenty tonight. I'm on until 12, then Patricia takes over. I wouldn't think you'd get many boats wanting to go through at this time of the year, especially at night. Oh, you'd be surprised. Look at there. He pointed to the moon, which was just coming up and beating silver across the water. Folks like moonlight cruise. Makes them romantic. Darker the moon's different, at least in summer.
Then it's mostly Coast Guard boats. Or DEA. Those boys are always in a hurry. Like blaring their horns could make this old bridge open any faster.
We talked a little more, and then I said I'd better be heading back.
Yes, Jim said. Long walk for a man getting on in years. But you'll have the moon to light your way.
I told him good evening and started back across the bridge.
Vic?
I turned back. He was leaning against his little booth, arms folded across his vest.
2 weeks after my wife died, I came down in the middle of the night for a glass of water and saw her sitting at the kitchen table, wearing her favorite nightgown. The kitchen light wasn't on, and the room was shadowy, but it was her, all right. I'd swear to it before God Almighty. Then I turned on the light and...
He raised one loosely fisted hand and opened the fingers.
Gone.
I heard my son after he died. It seemed perfectly right to give that up after what Jim had told me. Speaking from the closet, and I'd swear to that. He only nodded, wished me good night, and went back into his booth. For the first mile of my walk home, maybe a little more, there were plenty of houses, first those of ordinary size, but getting bigger and fancier as I went. There were lights in a few of them with cars parked in the shell driveways, but most of the houses were dark. Their owners would come back after Christmas and leave before Easter, depending on the pandemic situation, of course. Once I passed the swing gate at the north end of the quay, the few McMansions on this part of the island were hidden behind the rhododendrons and palmettos that closed in on both sides of the road. The only sounds were the crickets, the waves breaking on the gulfside beach, a whippoorwill, and my own footfalls. By the time I reached the yellow police tape closing off Mrs. Bell's driveway, it was almost full dark. That three-quarter moon had risen enough to light my way, but it was still mostly blocked by the foliage that grows in Florida's hothouse climate. As soon as I passed Allie's driveway, the squeaking started. It was 30 or 40 feet behind me. My skin broke out in bumps. My tongue stuck to the roof of my mouth. I stopped, unable to walk, let alone run. Not that with my creaky hips I could have run far anyway. I understood what was happening. They had been waiting for me in their driveway, waiting for me to pass so they could follow me back to Greg's. What I remember most about that first moment is how my eyes felt, like they were swelling in their sockets. I remember thinking that if they popped, I'd be blind. The squeaking stopped. Now I could hear another sound, my own heartbeat, like a muffled drum. The whippoorwill had fallen silent. So had the crickets. A drop of cold sweat trickled slowly down from the hollow of my temple to the angle of my jaw. I took a step. It was hard. Then another, a little easier. A third, easier still. I began to walk again, but it was as if I were on stilts. I had gotten perhaps 50 feet closer to Greg's house when the squeaking started again. I stopped, and the squeaking stopped. I started forward on my invisible stilts, and the squeaking started. It was the stroller. The twins pushing the stroller. They started when I started, and stopped when I stopped. They were grinning. I was sure of it, because it was a fine joke on their new... New what? What exactly was I to them? I was afraid I knew. Allie Bell had left me her house, money, and investments. But that wasn't all she had left me, was it?
Boys,
I said. My voice was not my own. I was still facing forward, and my voice was not my own.
Boys, go home. It's past your bedtime.
Nothing. I waited for cold hands to touch me, or to see dozens of snakes weaving their way across the moonlit road. The snakes would be cold, too. Until they bit, that was. Once the poison was injected, the heat would begin, spreading toward my heart. No snakes. The snakes are gone. You could see them, but they wouldn't be real. I walked. The stroller followed. Squeak and squeak and squeak. I stopped. The stroller stopped. I was close to Greg's house now. I could see the bulk of it against the sky, but that was no relief. They could come in. They had come in. See us, see us, see us. Roll us, roll us, roll us. Dress us, dress us, dress us. The thoughts were maddening, like one of those earworm songs that gets in your head and won't leave. Delta Dawn, for instance. But I could stop them. I knew what would make them go away, at least temporarily. They also knew. See us, roll us, dress us. I didn't dare turn around, but there was something I could do, if I dared. My phone was in the pocket of my shorts. I took it out, opened the camera app, and reversed the image so I was looking at my own terrified face, corpse pale in the moonlight. I raised the phone over my shoulder so I could look behind me without actually turning my head. I tried to steady my hand, hadn't realized it was shaking until then. Jacob and Joseph weren't there, and neither was the stroller. But their shadows were there. Two human shapes and the angular one of the double buggy their mother had pushed them around in. I can't say those disembodied shadows were worse than actually seeing them would have been, but they were terrible enough. I pushed the button to take a photograph with my thumb, sure it wouldn't work, but I heard the click. See us. Roll us. Push us. I closed the photo app and opened the voice memo. See us. Roll us. Push us. I thought those shadows were too long to be the shadows of 4-year-old children and thought again of Donna at the end of her life. You're all grown up. Look how tall you are. See us. Roll us. Push us. I started walking again. The squeaking followed me close at first and gradually falling behind. By the time I reached Greg's house, it was gone. But the clamoring thoughts, not voices, thoughts in my head were louder than ever. They were my thoughts, but I was being forced to think them. The stroller was back in the courtyard. Of course it was, and casting the same angular shadow I'd seen on my phone. The shirts were still neatly draped over the seats, Heckle on one and Jekyll on the other. I knew how to quiet the storm in my head. I touched the backs of the seats. I touched the shirts. The clamoring, repetitive thoughts died. I pushed the stroller back into the garage, then stepped away from it, waiting. The thoughts didn't return. But they would, of course. Next time, they would be louder and more insistent. Next time, they would want more than my touch. Next time, they'd want to go for a ride. I locked the doors, as if that would do any good, and turned on every light in the house. Then I sat at the kitchen table and looked at my phone. I had a missed call from Nathan Rutherford, but I had more pressing business than Allie Bell's lawyer. I looked at the picture I'd taken. It was a little blurred because my hand had never stopped shaking, but the shadows of the boys in the pram were there. Nothing was casting them. The road was empty. Next, I opened the voice memo app and pushed play. For 20 seconds, I heard the rhythmic squeaking of the pram's bad wheel. Then it faded away. I thought about getting in touch with Andy Pelly, because I was sure he'd registered the different position of the stroller when our talk was over. He'd given me his card. I could email him the photo and the voice memo, but he'd reject both. He'd say the shadows were of the palmettos. He might know better, but that's what he would say. And the squeaky wheel? He'd think I did that myself, running the stroller back and forth in the garage while I recorded. He might not say so, but he would think so. He was a cop, not a ghost hunter. But maybe that was okay. I had empiric proof for myself. I had already known what was happening was real, but the thought that it was all in my head had lingered in the background, even so. I sat at the kitchen table with my palms pressed against my forehead, thinking. Just a few missed beats of the old ticker, Allie had said when I asked if she was okay. But suppose she had been a lot sicker than she claimed, and knew it. Suppose it wasn't just arrhythmia, but congestive heart failure. Even cancer. One of those like glioblastoma that's a death warrant. Suppose she was resigned to her own death, but not to the deaths of her little boys. They had already died once, after all, but had come back. Or she had brought them back. And then, suppose she met me, I said. Yes, suppose. I called Nathan Rutherford, introduced myself, and immediately cut to the chase. I had no interest in Allie Bell's estate. I think his chuckle was more cynical than surprised.
Nevertheless, Mr. Trenton, you seem to have it.
Ridiculous. Find her relatives.
She claimed she had none. That after her husband died and the little Jays, that's what she called him, she was the last sprig on the family tree. It's the only reason that poor excuse for a will could ever stand up. Her estate is worth a good deal of money. 7 figures, perhaps even 8. She must have been taken with you, sir.
No, I thought. I'm the one who was taken. But I don't intend to stay taken.
It's put me in a lousy position, Mr. Rutherford. I found her, and pending the autopsy, I look like a man with a motive for killing her. You see that, right?
Did you have any reason to believe you were in line to inherit? Perhaps you saw that scrap of a will before Mrs. Bell's decease?
No, but Deputy Pelly told me the envelope it was in was unsealed. A county attorney who wanted to make a case could say I had access to it.
Time will take care of this, Rutherford said, which meant nothing. He had adopted a soothing voice he probably used on distraught clients. Those with money, at least, and it seemed that I now had a lot more than what was in my 401k.
If the will is unchallenged and goes through probate, you can do what you wish with the proceeds. Sell the house. Give the money away to worthy charities, should you decide to do so.
He didn't go on to say that charity begins at home, but his tone suggested it. I had had enough. He wanted to discuss the serpentine legal trail that lay ahead, but I had my own serpents to worry about. It was dark outside, and I was scared. I thanked him and ended the call. Had she made her will and then killed herself with an overdose of digoxin or sotalol? No, I thought. The little Jays wouldn't like that. I could end up in the county jail where see us, roll us, dress us would do no good. The verdict at the inquest will be accidental death, but in the meantime, I'll be here, and they'll be here. Because they want me to stay, I whispered. I took a shower, put on a pair of gym shorts, closed the door to the ensuite bathroom, and lay down on Greg Ackerman's big double bed. As a more or less swinging bachelor, he'd probably shared it with any number of honeys. My own honey was gone, in the ground, like my son. I crossed my arms over my chest in an unconscious gesture of protection and stared up at the ceiling. It hadn't been her. It had been them. They wanted me to stay. They wanted to work on me. They wanted me to take over from their mother, so they wouldn't have to go to wherever uneasy revenants go to. They liked it right here on Rattlesnake Key, where, if I didn't want my head filled with
tumbling and repetitive thoughts. If I didn't want to hear the stroller's squeaky wheel behind me, I would live in Allie's house. I would eat in Allie's kitchen and sleep in Allie's bed. I would push them in their stroller. I would eventually come to see them. I don't have to stay here, I thought. I've got a rental car with a full tank of gas. I can get away, away from them. I don't think the county sheriff will issue a warrant for my arrest, although some judge might issue a bench warrant ordering me to come back pending the inquest. Rutherford would know, and I guess he's my lawyer now, but I'd fight it. And while the lawyers wrangled, Jake and Joe would be getting weaker, because she's gone, and I'm what they have. Yes, all true enough, and I was scared. You can believe that. There's a line from Scorsese's Mean Streets that's always resonated with me. You don't fuck around with the infinite. But I was also angry. I had been put in a box I wasn't supposed to escape. Not by their mother. In my heart, I was sure that Allie Bell hadn't been in on this, but by a couple of kids. Dead kids, in fact. I had no secret weapon to fight them with. No cross or garlic to ward off vampires, which, if I was right, is sort of what they were. No rite of exorcism. But I had my mind, and I was too damn old to be pushed around by bad and badder. If Allie hadn't built the box I was in, how could they have done it? Most little boys, I had one, remember, can hardly plan a trip to the bathroom. I fell asleep thinking of Donna. Minutes from her end. You're all grown up. Look how tall you are. Squeak, squeak, squeak. I didn't come awake in the dark, at least, because I hadn't turned off the lights. This time the stroller's squeaky wheel wasn't coming from the ensuite. It was further away. I thought it was in the part of the house Greg grandly called the guest quarters. Those quarters consisted of a small living room on the ground floor and a spiral staircase leading up to a bedroom and attached bathroom on the second. The stroller was in the guest bedroom. The real stroller might be still in the garage, but the ghostly one was also real, and so were the twins pushing it so maniacally back and forth. The thoughts seeped back in. They were low at first, but grew louder, as if an unseen hand was turning up the volume. See us, roll us, dress us. See us, roll us, dress us. See us, roll us, dress us. I lay on my back, clutching my hands together on my chest, biting my lip, trying to make the thoughts, their thoughts, my thoughts, stop. I might as well have insisted that the sun not go down. I could still think other thoughts. How long that would last, I didn't know. And there seemed to be only three courses of action I could pursue. Lie here and go mad once those earworms swallowed everything. Go down and touch the stroller in the garage, which would silence them for the time being. Or confront the twins. That's what I decided to do. I thought, I won't be driven mad by children. And I thought, roll us. Roll us. Push us. Push us. We're yours. You're ours. I got off the bed and started down the upstairs gallery to the guest quarters. Halfway there, the squeaking wheel stopped. I didn't, and the thoughts, roll us. Push us. Dress us. We're yours. You're ours. Didn't either. I didn't hesitate at the door, which was ajar. If I had stopped to think in the part of my mind that was still capable of independent thought, I would have turned tail and run. What was I going to do in there? I had no idea. Telling them to go home or get a spanking certainly wouldn't work. What I saw froze me in place. The stroller was beached in the middle of the floor. Jacob and Joseph were in the guest bed. They were no longer children, yet they were. The bodies under the coverlet were long, the bodies of full-grown men,
but the heads, although grotesquely swollen, were those of children. Rattlesnake poison had so bloated those heads that they had become pumpkins with Halloween faces. Their lips were black. Their foreheads, cheeks, and necks were stippled with snake bites. The eyes were sunken, but hellishly alive and aware. They were grinning at me.
"Bedtime story! Bedtime story!
Then they were gone. The stroller was gone. 1 minute the twins were there, waiting for their bedtime story. At the next, the room was empty.
But the coverlet was turned down on both sides, in neat triangles, and that bed had been perfectly made when I came here from Massachusetts. I had seen it for myself.
My legs were stilt legs again. I went into the room on them and looked at the bed where the boys had been. I didn't mean to sit on it, but I did because my knees gave out. My heart was still thundering away, and I could hear myself, as at a distance, gasping for breath. This is how old men die, I thought. When I'm found, probably by Pete Ito, the medical examiner would conclude it was a heart attack. They wouldn't know I had been scared to death by two dead men with the heads of children. Only the twins wouldn't like me to die, would they? Now that their mother was gone, I was their only link to the world in which they wanted to stay. I reached out to touch a turned-down triangle of coverlet with each hand and knew they didn't like this bed. They had their own beds in the house down the road. Good beds. Their mother would have kept their room just the way it had been on the day they died, 40-some years ago. Those were the beds they liked, and when I lived there, I would tuck them in at night and read them Winnie the Pooh as I had to Tad. I certainly wouldn't read them Tad's monster words, because they were the monsters. When I could get up, I walked slowly back down to the gallery to my own room. I might not sleep, but I didn't think I'd hear the stroller's squeaky wheel again that night. The visitation was over. There was never a question of keeping the car in which my son had died. We wouldn't have kept it even if it hadn't been bashed at a dozen places by the dog trying to get in and get at them. A wrecker brought it back to our house. Donna refused to even look at that either. I didn't blame her. There was no junkyard in Castle Rock. The closest was Andretti's in Gates Falls. I called them. They came, got the Pinto, the death car, and ran it through the crusher. What came out was a cube shot through with bright seams of glass, windows, taillights, headlights, windshield. I took a picture. Donna wouldn't look at it. By then, the arguments had started. She wanted me to go on her weekly pilgrimages to Harmony Hill, where Tad was buried. I refused that, as she had refused to look at the crushed cube of the death car. I said Tad was at the house for me, and always would be. She said that sounded high-flown and noble, but it wasn't true. She said I was afraid to go, afraid I'd break down. And of course, she was right. I imagine she saw it in my face every time she looked at me. She was the one who moved out. I came back from a business trip to Boston and she was gone. There was a note. It said the usual things, you can probably guess. Can't go on this way. Start a new life. Turn the page. Blah, blah, blah. The only really original thing was the line she'd scrawl under her name, perhaps as an afterthought. I'm still in love with you, and I hate you, and I'm leaving before hate gets the upper hand. Probably I don't have to tell you I felt the same way about her. Deputy Zane called me the next morning while I was spooning up rice checks, not enjoying them, just gassing up for the day. He said the autopsy had been completed. Alida Bell, wife to Henry, mother to Jacob and Joseph, had died of a heart attack.
The ME said it was amazing she lived as long as she did. She had 90% blockages, but that wasn't all. There was cardiac scarring, which means she'd suffered a number of previous heart attacks. Small ones, you know. He also said, well, never mind.
No, go ahead, please. Zane cleared his throat.
He said, even little heart attacks, one you might not even feel, impair cognition. That could explain why she sometimes believed her children were still alive.
I thought of telling him that I knew her children were alive, or half alive, and I'd never had a heart attack. I think I almost did tell him.
Mr. Trenton? Vic?
Just thinking about that, I said.
Does this let me off the hook for the inquest?
Nope. You still have to be here for that. You found the body.
But if it was a heart attack, pure and simple...
Oh, it was. But there won't be a toxicology report for another couple of days. Need to find out what was in her stomach. Just dotting I's and crossing T's, you know?
I thought it might be a little more.
I thought Andy Pelley wanted to make sure that Allie Bell's last-minute legatee hadn't fed her something.
Digoxin in her scrambled eggs at an early breakfast, perhaps. Meanwhile, Zane was talking, and I had to ask him to rewind.
I was saying there's a problem. Kind of unique. We've got a body, but no burial instructions. Andy Pelley says you might be on the hook for that.
Wait, what? I'm supposed to plan a funeral?
Probably not a funeral, Zane said, sounding a trifle embarrassed. Other than the bridge tenders and maybe Lloyd Sunderland, he lives on the other side of the bridge, I don't know who'd come.
I think her kids would, I thought, although no one would see them, except maybe for their surrogate dad.
Vic? Mr. Trenton, did I lose you?
Right here. I have the name of her lawyer. My lawyer now, I guess, at least until this gets straightened out. I better give him a call once it gets to business hours.
That's a good idea. You do that. And have a good day.
As if? I didn't want the rest of my cereal, which I hadn't been tasting anyway. I rinsed the bowl in the sink, see us, and put it in the dishwasher, dress us, and wondered what to do next. Like I didn't know. Take us for a walk. Roll us. I held out against the thoughts, partly my thoughts, that was the worst of it, until I got some clothes on, then gave up. I went out to the garage and grasped the handles of the stroller. I felt a sigh of relief, mine or theirs or both, I didn't know. The rat run in my head ceased. I thought of rolling the pram down to the swing gate and knew it was a bad idea. Jacob and Joseph had already wedged their way into my consciousness. The more I did what they wanted, the easier it would be for them to control me. What I had seen in the guest bedroom stayed with me. Men's bodies, children's heads swollen with poison. They had grown in death. They had stayed the same. They had the will of men and the simple and selfish desires of small children. They were powerful, and that was bad, but they were also psychotic. That said, that accepted, I could still feel a certain amount of sympathy. They had fallen among rattlesnakes. They had been stung to death by serpents. Who would not be driven insane by such an ending to life? And who would not want to come back and have the childhood that had been denied to them, even if that meant taking someone prisoner to do it? I rolled the stroller back and forth across the concrete floor of the garage a few times, as if trying to lull colicky, cranky babies to sleep. I wondered if it could have been anyone, and guessed it couldn't have been. I was perfect, a man alone, one suffering his own grief. I let go of the handles and waited for see us, roll us, dress us to come back. It didn't. I left the garage, wanting to feel the warmth of the morning sun on my living face. I lifted my head and closed my eyes, seeing red as the blood in my eyelids lit up. I stood that way as if in worship or meditation, hoping for a solution to a problem that was beyond existential, one I couldn't tell anyone about. I'm supposed to see her into the grounds because she has no one, on this side of the veil at least. But am I not the same? My parents are dead. My older brother is dead. My wife is dead. Who will bury me? And what will those twins from hell do? Supposing they get their way and I stay here, a male version of Delta Dawn, when I pass. Given my age and the actuarial tables, it won't be all that long. Will they shrivel and just fade away? I can bury Allie, but who will bury me? I opened my eyes and saw Allie's snake pole lying on the courtyard cobbles, exactly where the stroller had been parked each time it returned. It crossed my mind that it might be another illusion, like a tub full of snakes, and knew it wasn't. This wasn't a vision or a visitation, nor had the twins put it here. The stroller was their thing. I picked it up. It was real, all right. The steel pole was warm in my hand. If it had lain out here much longer on the shadeless cobbles, it would have been almost too hot to handle. No one had been here, so who had taken it from the garage? As I held it, I realized my parents, brother, and wife weren't the only loved ones in my life who were dead. There was one more, one who had also died a terrible death at a young age. Tad. It should have sounded pathetic at best, crazy at worst. An old man speaking his long-dead son's name in the empty courtyard of an absurdly oversized house on a Florida key? It didn't, so I said it again. Tad, are you there? Nothing. Only the snake pole, which was undeniably real. Can you help me? There was that ramshackle gazebo at the end of Greg's boardwalk. I went out there with the snake pole over my shoulder the way an old-time soldier might carry his rifle, and while the pole had no bayonet, it did have that wicked hook at the end. On the gazebo's floor were a few mold-streaked life jackets that didn't look like they'd save anyone's life, and an ancient boogie board decorated with a scattering of raccoon shit. I sat on the bench. It creaked beneath my weight. It didn't have to be Hercule Poirot to know Greg didn't spend much time out here by the beach. He had a Gulf Coast house worth $6 or $8 million, and this outpost looked like a forgotten privy somewhere in the wilds of Bossier Parish, Louisiana. But I hadn't come here to appreciate the architecture. I had come here to think. Oh, but that was bullshit. I had come here to try and summon my dead son. There were methods of summoning, assuming the dead hadn't drifted away to wherever they go when they lose interest in this world. I looked some up on the internet before coming out here. You could use a Ouija board, which I didn't have. You could use a mirror or candles, both of which I did. But after what I'd seen on my cell phone screen last night, I didn't dare try it. There were spirits in Greg's house, but the ones I was sure of weren't friendly. So in the end, I'd come out here to this uncared-for gazebo empty-handed. I sat and looked out at a beach unmarked by a single track and a gulf unmarked by a single sail. In February or March, both the beach and the water would have been packed. In August, there was only me. Until I felt him. Or someone. Or just wishful thinking. Tad. Nothing. If you're there, kiddo, I could use a little help. But he wasn't a kiddo. Not anymore. 4 decades had passed since Tad Trenton died in that hot car with the rabid St. Bernard patrolling the dooryard of a farmhouse as deserted as the north end of Rattlesnake Key. The dead could age. I had never considered the possibility, but knew it now. But only if they wanted to, allowed themselves to. It was apparently possible to both grow and not grow, a paradox that had produced the gruesome hybrids I'd seen in the guest room's double bed. Man-things with the bloated heads of poisoned children. You don't owe me anything. I came too late. I know that. I admit that. Only, I stopped. You'd think a man could say anything when he's alone, wouldn't you? Only I wasn't entirely sure I was. Nor was I sure what I wanted to say until I said it. I mourned you, Tad, but I let you go. In time, Donna did too. That's not wrong, is it? Forgetting is what would be wrong. Holding on too tightly. I think that makes monsters. I had the snake pole across my lap. If you left this for me, I really could use a little help. I waited. There was nothing. There was also something. Either a presence or the hope of an old man who had been scared half to death and forced to remember old hurts. Every snake that ever bit him. Then the thoughts came back, driving away whatever delicate thing might have come to visit me.
Dress us, roll us, see us, see us, dress us, roll us.
The kids wanted me. The kids who wanted to be my kids. And they were also my thoughts. That was the horror of it. Having your own mind turned against you is a guilt-edged invitation to insanity. What interrupted them, partially at least, was the honking of a horn. I turned and saw someone waving to me, just a silhouette at the edge of the courtyard, but the shapes of the spindly legs beneath the baggy shorts were enough to tell me who my company was. I waved back, propped the snake pole against the gazebo's railing, and headed back along the boardwalk. Andy Pelly met me halfway.
Good morning, Mr. Trenton.
Vic, remember?
Vic, right. I was out this way and thought I'd drop by.
Bullshit you were, I thought. And I thought, roll us, dress us, see us. We're waiting for you.
What can I do for you? I thought I'd fill you in on the autopsy.
Officer Zane already called and told me. I couldn't see if he frowned at that because of the way his bushy mustache held his mask away from his face, but his eyebrows, also bushy, drew together, so I think he did.
Well, good, good.
Bullshit, you think it's good, I thought, and thought, roll us, roll us. You'll feel better. You know you will. We walked back to the house. The boardwalk was too narrow for us to go side by side, so I led the way. The thoughts, mine, that I couldn't banish, were giving me a headache.
Still waiting on the toxicology, of course.
We reached the end of the boardwalk and strolled across the courtyard past his truck, me still leading the way. He wasn't here just to tell me about the autopsy. I knew that, and knew I needed a clear mind to deal with him.
So Officer Zane said, also that I'll still have to be at the inquest. Do you have something for me, deputy? Because I was sitting out there, doing some thinking and trying to be peaceful. Meditation, you might call it.
And I'll let you get back to it. Just a few questions is all.
We went into the garage, where it was marginally cooler. I went to the stroller. As I neared it, the thoughts ramped up.
Dress us, roll us, see us.
For a moment I did seem to see them. Not as monstrosities, but as the children they'd been when they died. Just for a moment. When I gripped one of the stroller handles, they were gone. Assuming they'd been there at all. And the maddening litany in my head ceased. I rolled the perambulator back and forth. Just something to do with my hands, Andy. Think nothing of it.
I looked you up a little, Andy said.
I know you did.
Terrible thing what happened to your own little boy. Just terrible.
It was a long time ago. Andy, are you on this case? If there is a case? Were you assigned to it? Because somehow I doubt that.
No, no, he said, raising his hands in a perish-the-thought gesture. But you know how it is.
You can take the man out of the cops, but you can't take the cop out of the man. Probably the same in your business. Advertising, wasn't it?
You know it was, and the answer is no. On the rare occasions when I watch network TV instead of streaming, I mute the ads. You really have no business here at all, do you?
No, I wouldn't go that far. I just... Man, I'm curious. This is a funny business. Meaning funny peculiar, not funny haha. You must see that.
Back and forth went the stroller, a few feet ahead, a few feet back, soothing the kids, keeping them quiet.
Why would she leave you everything? That gets me, and I bet you know.
That was true. I did.
I don't. And why do you keep bringing that stroller back from her place? Because it's got to be you, doesn't it? No one else out here this time of year.
Not me. He sighed.
Talk to me, Vic. Why not? If her tox screen comes back negative, you got away with whatever you got away with.
So there it was. He thought I'd killed her.
Help an old duffer out. It's just the two of us.
I didn't like this Wilfred Brimley look-alike who had interrupted me while I was trying something delicate. It probably wouldn't have worked, but that didn't make me feel any better about him, so I pretended to consider what he was asking for. I said, "Show me your phone." Even the bulge of his mustache couldn't quite hide the smile on his mouth. I couldn't gauge the exact quality of that smile, but I'd be willing to bet it was of the "you got me, partner" variety. The phone came out of the baggy shorts, and yes, it was recording.
Must have hit that by accident.
I'm sure. Now turn it off. He did so with no argument.
Now it really is just the two of us. So satisfy my curiosity.
All right. I took a dramatic pause, the kind that usually worked with clients before you unveiled the ad campaign they'd come to see, and then led with two lies, followed by the stone truth. I don't know why someone keeps bringing her stroller back. That's number one. I don't know why she left that crazy will. That's number two. And here's number three, Deputy Pelly. I didn't kill her. The inquest goes a long way toward proving she died of natural causes. The toxicology report will go the rest of the way. I hoped it would. Hoped that the ghost twins hadn't somehow gotten into her head and compelled her to swallow a bunch of her heart meds so they could jump to a marginally more healthy host. You'd think a tox report showing she'd ingested too many pills would run counter to their best interests, and you would be right. But they were children. Now I think you should go. I stopped rolling the stroller. And take this thing with you.
I don't want it,
he said, and seemed surprised at the vehemence in his own voice. He knew something was wrong with it, oh yes. He started out of the garage, then looked back.
I'm not done with you.
Oh, for God's sake, Andy, just do something else. Go fishing. Enjoy your retirement. He went back to his truck, got in, revved the engine, and peeled out hard enough to leave a rubber tattoo on the courtyard pavers. I thought I might as well go back to the gazebo, at least until the earworms started up again. Not really earworms. Snakes. Snakes in my head. Two of them. And if I didn't do what they wanted, they'd inject their poison from sacks that never emptied. In a way, I didn't blame Pelly for his suspicions. Allie's lawyer, Rutherford, probably had some of his own. The whole thing was wrong. The most wrong thing of all was my current wretched position. What was unpleasant today would be terrible tonight. They were stronger at night. What had Jim, the bridge keeper, said? Dusk. You know, real things seem thinner then. It was true, and once night comes, the wall between real things and a whole other plane of existence can disappear completely. One thing seemed sure. Any chance of contacting my dead son was gone. The old cop had broken the spell. Best to just sit for a while, looking out at the gulf, try to get Pelly.
I'm not done with you.
Out of my mind. Think about what to do while I still could think. When I got to the gazebo, I just stood there, looking in. Pelly wasn't the only one not done with me, it seemed. Tad, or someone, had made contact after all. The snake pole was no longer leaning against the railing. It was lying on the gazebo's floor. The litter of old life jackets had been pushed aside. Scratched into one of the planks, by the sharp point of the snake pole's hook, I had no doubt, were two letters. A third had been started, but left incomplete. I looked at those letters and knew what I had to do. It had been staring me in the face all along. Jacob and Joseph, Hickle and Jekyll, Bad and Badder, weren't as all-powerful as they seemed. In the end, they only had one link to the world of the living now that their mother was gone. The two letters scrawled on the plank were P-R. The one that had been started and then abandoned was the slanted bar of an A. Pram. If it could be all finished and done with when it's done, then it may as well be done quickly. That was Macbeth's idea about such matters as this, and he was a thinking cat. I believed I might be able to deal with my two hybrid harpies if I acted fast. If I didn't, and the thought snakes burrowed deeper into my mind, I might end with only two choices, suicide or a life as their surrogate father, as their slave. I went back to the house and into the garage, just ambling along. Look at me, not a care in the world. The thoughts started up at once. I no longer need to tell you what they were. I took hold of the stroller's handles and rolled it back and forth, listening to the hellish squeaking. If I couldn't get rid of them, I'd oil that bad wheel. Of course I would. More. I'd drape different shirts over the backs of the chairs. Put different shorts on the seats. When I took up residence in the Bell House, which would become the Trenton House, I would talk to them. I would turn down their beds at night and read to them from In the Night Kitchen, Sylvester and the Magic Pebble, Corduroy. I would show them the pictures.
How are you, boys?
Good, good.
Do you want to go for a ride?
Yes, yes.
All right, why don't we do that? I just need to take care of a couple of things. I'll be right back. I went in the house and grabbed my phone off the kitchen table. I checked the county tide chart and liked what I saw. It was going out and would be a dead low shortly after 11 a.m. Soon. I was still wearing my workout shorts and a t-shirt with the arms cut off. I dropped the shirt on the floor, kicked off my sandals, and hurried upstairs. I put on a pair of jeans and a sweatshirt. I jammed on a Red Sox hat. I had no boots, but in the downstairs closet I found a pair of galoshes. They were Greg's and too big for me, so I went back upstairs and put on three more pairs of socks to bulk up my feet. By the time I was back downstairs, I was sweating in spite of the air conditioning. Outside, in the August heat, I would be sweating even more. Andy Pelly said they'd driven the snakes to the northern end of the quay, where those that didn't burn had drowned, but he had also said the line of beaters probably hadn't gotten all of them. I had no idea if the Jays could call those that might be left. Maybe they couldn't. Or maybe there weren't any at all after 40 years, but I had dressed for snakes just in case. One thing I did know is that Florida is a reptile-friendly environment. I looked under the sink and found a pair of rubber kitchen gloves. I yanked them on and went back out to the garage, pasting a big smile on my face. I'm sure if anyone had heard me talking to that empty stroller, they would have thought me as crazy as Allie Bell. But it was just me, and them, of course. Want to walk instead? Trying to sound teasing. Trying to sell the concept, as we used to say. Big boys like you can probably walk, right?
No, roll us, roll us.
Will you be good if I take you on the beach?
Yes! Roll us, roll us.
Then chilling me all the way to my core.
Roll us on the beach, Daddy.
Okay, I said, thinking only one boy ever had the right to call me that, you little shit.
Here we go.
We cut across the courtyard in the hot August sunshine.
Squeak and squeak and squeak.
I was sweating like a pig inside the sweatshirt already. I could feel it rolling down my sides to the waistband of my jeans. I pushed the stroller along the boardwalk, the slats rumbling under the wheels. Easy enough so far. The beach would be harder. I might get bogged down. I'd have to stay near the water where the sand was packed and wet. That might work. It might not. I rolled the pram through the gazebo. I picked up the snake pole on the way and placed it horizontally between the stroller's wide handles.
Having fun, boys?
Yes, yes.
Sure you don't want to get out and walk?
Please, no.
Roll us, roll us.
Okay, but hold on. Little bump here. I eased the stroller down the single slumped step between the gazebo and the line of beach alpaca and seagrass. Then we were on the sand. I had the slope to help me as I pushed the stroller down to the harder pack at the edge of the water. The buckles of the galoshes jingled.
Whee! I said. My face was running with sweat, but my mouth was dry.
Having fun, boys? Yes, roll us!
I was beginning to be able to tell them apart. That was Joe. Jake was silent. I didn't like that.
Jake? Having fun, big fella?
Yes.
Didn't like the edge of doubt, either. Something else not to like. They were separating from me. Getting stronger. More there. Some of it was the stroller, but some of it was me. I had opened myself to them. I had to. There had been no choice. I turned north and pushed the stroller. Little birds, the one I called Peeps, strutted ahead of us, then flew. The galoshes jingled and splashed. The wheels of the stroller threw up tiny rainbows in the thin water where the gulf gave way to the land. The sand was firm but still harder to push through than on the planks of the boardwalk. Soon my breath was rasping in and out of my throat. I wasn't in bad shape, never drank to excess, and never smoked at all, but I was in my 70s. Jake.
Where are you taking us?
Oh, just for a little ride. I wanted to stop, take a rest, but I was afraid the wheels would get mired if I even slowed down.
You wanted to go for a roll. I'm taking you for a roll.
Jake.
I want to go back.
That was more than doubt. That was suspicion. And Joe caught it from his brother just as I supposed he'd caught his brother's colds.
Joe.
Me too. I'm tired. The sun is too hot. We should have worn our hatties.
Just a little fur, I began, and that was when the snakes began to come out of the alpaca and palmetto. Big ones, dozens of them, flooding down to the beach. I hesitated, but only for a second. Any longer, and the stroller would have been stuck. I pushed them through the snakes, and they were gone, like the ones in the tub. Jake.
Back! Take us back! Take us back!
Joe.
I don't like it here!
He started to cry.
I don't like the snakies!
We're treasure hunters, I was panting now. Maybe we'll even see King Kong, like in the movie. How about that, you little rascals? Ahead, I could see the triangle of heaped shells where Rattlesnake Key ended. Beyond it was Daylight Pass with its eternal whirlpool. Andy said that Eddie had dug the bed of the pass deep there. I didn't remember how deep. 16 feet, maybe. But those heaped shells between me and the water were a problem. The stroller would get bogged down in them for sure, and crawling across them were a couple of snakes I didn't believe were illusions or ghosts. They were too there. Leftovers from the great snake hunt? Newcomers? It didn't matter. Jake, not begging, but commanding,
"Take us back! Take us back, or you'll be sorry!"
I'm sorry already, I thought. I couldn't say it out loud. I didn't have enough breath left. My heart was running amok. I expected it to simply burst like an overinflated balloon at any second. To my horror, the twins were swimming into existence. Their men's bodies were too big for the stroller's double seats, but were in them just the same.
their swollen children's heads turned to look at me, eyes black and malevolent, the red pepper of snake bites stippling their cheeks and foreheads, as if they were suffering from an apocalyptic case of chicken pox. This pair of snakes was real, all right. Their bodies made a dry shushing sound as their sinuous S-curves spiraled through the shells. Their tails rattled, dry bones in a gourd. Jake.
Bite him! Bite him good!
Joe.
Bite him! Make him stop! Make him take us back!
When they struck, it felt like BBs hitting the rubber galoshes. Or maybe hailstones. The stroller finally stuck fast, wheels deep in shells. The men children inside it were twisted around, staring at me, but it seemed they couldn't get out. At least not yet. One of the rattlers was gripping my right foot through the galosh, its head spiraling up. Because the stroller was stuck anyway, beached, so to speak, I let it go in favor of the snake pole. I plunged it down, hoping not to give myself a nasty gash, but knowing I couldn't afford to hesitate. I caught a loop with the hook and flung the snake toward the water. The other struck at my left galosh. For one moment I saw its black eyes staring up at me and thought they were the same eyes as the ones looking at me from the stroller. Then I brought the hook down and speared it behind its triangular head. When I raised the snake pole, I felt its tail thwap my shoulder, perhaps looking for a grip. It didn't find one. I flung it. For one moment it was a writhing scribble against the sky, then it was in the water. The stroller was rocking back and forth as the things inside it, visible yet ephemeral, struggled to get out. They still couldn't. The stroller was their link to the world and to me. I couldn't push it any further, so I dropped the snake pole and tipped it over. I heard them scream as they hit the shells, and then they were gone. By that, I mean I could no longer see us, see us, see them, but they were still there. I could hear Jake shrieking and Joe crying. Sobbing, really, as he had probably sobbed when he realized he was covered with rattlesnakes and his too short life was ending. Those sounds made me sorry. I was sure my son had also cried while he and Donna were broiling in that pinto. But that didn't stop me. I had to finish what I started, if I could. Gasping, I dragged the stroller toward the pass, toward the whirlpool. Jake.
No, no! You're supposed to take care of us, roll us, push us, dress us. No!
His brother only shrieked with terror. I was 20 feet from the water's edge when flames burst up all around me. They weren't real, they had no heat, but I could smell kerosene. The stench was so strong it made me cough. The coughing turned into gagging. The blinding white heaps of shells were gone, replaced by a carpet of burning snakes. They weren't real, either, but I could hear the popcorn sound of their rattles bursting in the heat. They struck at me with heads that weren't there. I reached the water. I could push the stroller in, but that wouldn't be good enough. They might be able to get the haunted thing out, just as they'd somehow managed to get it from the bell house to Greg's. But I've been told that men or even women, small women, are sometimes able to lift cars off their trapped children. And once upon a time, a woman named Donna Trenton had fought a 150-pound St. Bernard with nothing but a baseball bat, and won. If she could do that, surely I could do this. That stroller didn't weigh 150, but it might have gone 30. If the things had been in it, and if they'd also had actual weight, I never could have lifted it even to my waist. But they didn't. I hoisted it by the struts above the back wheels. I twisted my hips to the right, producing an audible creaking from my back. I turned the other way and slung the stroller like the world's clumsiest discus. It splashed down only 5 feet from the edge of the shell beach. Not far enough, but the current from Calypso Bay was running strong with the ebbing tide. The stroller, tilting this way and that, was pulled into the whirlpool. They were in it again. Maybe they had to be in it. I got one more look at those terrible faces before they were carried away. When the stroller came back around, it was sinking, the seats underwater.
Its occupants were gone. One of the shirts floated away, then the other. I heard a final shriek of anger in my head. That was Jake Bell, the stronger of the two. The next time the stroller came around on its watery carousel, only the handles were above water. The time after, it was gone, except for a watery sunflash 3 or 4 feet down. The flames were also gone, and the burning snakes. Only the stench of kerosene remained. A pair of blue shorts floated toward me. I picked up the snake pole, hooked them, and flung them out into the gulf. My back creaked again. I bent over, trying to soothe it. When I straightened up and looked across Daylight Pass, I saw a lot more than a few masses of floating green.